Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable. Changing their life forever so they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Robert Gates, President Bush's nominee to replace Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, said we are losing the war in Iraq. The Armed Services Committee pressed him for answers on what he will do as head of the Defense Department about Iraq and about a Middle East that is increasingly unstable. We'll dip into today's hearings and talk about whether Robert Gates is the right man for the job. First, Chairman John Warner from his opening statement.
You've been nominated for one of the most important positions in government. You will be an important part of the new review process in determining the strategy and the direction this country, together with our partners in the coalition, must pursue. I urge you not to restrict your advice, your personal opinions regarding the current and future evaluations in these strategy discussions. In short, you simply have to be fearless, I repeat, fearless in discharging your statutory obligations as, quote, the principal assistant to the president in all matters relating to the Department of Defense.
The stakes are huge, Gates' track record compelling, but he has critics, and we'll hear from one of them, and from former Defense Secretary William Cohen. This hour, On Point, top military and intelligence experts give us their take on Bush's nominee to head the Defense Department. Joining me now from Washington is Kevin Whitelaw, who's been following today's hearings for U.S. News and World Report. Kevin, good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Give us a sense, if you would, of the hearings so far. What's the tone?
Well, the tone of this has been largely focused on the actual policy debate in Iraq. The senators seem to all want to be seen as working hard to try to find a solution, and a lot of them are using this as a forum to debate the administration's policy going forward on this. There's been a lot less about the man himself, which is a marked contrast to when he was before some of the same senators in his confirmation hearing for the CIA director job 15 years ago.
Is there one particular aspect of Iraq policy, Kevin, that keeps coming up?
Well, you know, there's been a number of aspects. Obviously, troop levels have been the main one, as well as just the sort of, you know, how to sort of reverse and change the dynamic of the violence in Iraq. But definitely troop levels and whether they need to be increased or decreased or how they need to be handled have very much been on the minds of most of the senators.
Well, let's listen to a couple of those exchanges. Here's Robert Gates' response to Senator Carl Levin talking about our commitment of troops in Iraq.
It seems to me that the United States is going to have some presence in Iraq for a long time. The Iraqi forces clearly have no logistical capability of their own. They have no air power of their own. So the United States clearly, even if whatever changed approach or strategy we come up with, the president implements, works, we are still going to have some level of American support there for the Iraqi military. And that could take quite some time, but it could be with a dramatically smaller number of U.S. forces than are there today. And so I would interpret the president's remarks in this vein, that we are willing to continue to help the Iraqis as long as they want our help. I don't think that it implies that we will be there in at the level of force we have or doing the things that we are doing in a major combat way for the indefinite future.
And here is Senator John McCain asking Robert Gates about future troop levels in Iraq.
Do you agree that at the time of the invasion, we didn't have sufficient troops to control the country in hindsight?
Well, I've had to deal with hindsight in some of the decisions that I've made, Senator McCain, and sometimes it's not very comfortable. And I suspect in hindsight some of the folks in the administration probably would not make the same decisions that they made. And I think one of those is that there clearly were insufficient troops in Iraq after the initial invasion to establish control over the country.
Kevin Whitelaw, U.S. News and World Report. What's the sense that you get of the senator's response to Gates' answers to their questions?
Well, you know, I think that varied a little bit by party. But again, everyone in this, all the senators share an interest in confirming Gates, because basically everyone's ready for a change and they're ready to have an end to the Rumsfeld era. So, you're not seeing the sort of skepticism or even hostility that he had encountered 15 years ago. You're not seeing questions about Iran-Contra. You're not seeing questions about other things. Everyone among the senators, though, is skeptical about whether the policy review that's ongoing with regards to Iraq is broad enough, and whether the Bush administration is open enough to new ideas. Senator McCain spent some time talking, trying to make his point, which he's argued a lot about, why there might be more troops that need to be sent over rather than fewer. And a lot of the Democrats showed a fair amount of skepticism about whether or not what's being talked about so far really is going to do much. I think what that reflects is a larger fear and concern that, on one level, we're perhaps already too late in coming to this full-on policy review to have a true effect on the ground in Iraq.
Hmm. So it seems that he will be confirmed, Robert Gates.
And yes, I don't think there's any doubt about it. In fact, there haven't even been the kind of contentious, showmanship that you sometimes see with this, people trying to make political points here, except when it does come to the issue of Iraq, and I think that's much more focused on policy. Well, so, everyone in the Senate's going to be much happier dealing with Gates in that job than Rumsfeld, and so everyone is ready for that. They see that as a necessary step towards change. You know, the real question then still comes, though. You know, is Bush going to really change his policy substantially? And then, even if he does, can it make a difference in Iraq? And the concern there is that the violence, the Sunni and Shiite and Sunni violence, has simply taken on such its own dynamic that is almost independent of the presence of U.S. troops. And it just feeds on itself. And the real question is, all right, the presence of U.S. troops has been a calming presence at times, but can it ever be anything more than that?
So we keep hearing President Bush say no course correction in Iraq. So regardless of today's hearing and what Robert Gates believes, does it really matter?
Well, that's exactly it. And in fact, you've already seen President Bush lay out a lot of the boundaries of the things he isn't going to do with regards to changing policy in Iraq, whether it has to do with the change at the Pentagon or with the Iraq Study Group report, which comes out tomorrow. So you've seen him say there'll be no partition, there'll be no timetables for withdrawal, there'll be no this, there'll be no that. So there already are a fair number of sort of boundaries within which now this policy review can take place. So there's those constraints, and there's the constraints of the realities, which is simply that events on the ground in Iraq have always driven what's going on in our situation there more than anything in Washington ever has.
Kevin, let's dip back into the hearing and listen to Lindsey Graham in a bullet fire exchange with Robert Gates.
Do you believe the terrorist Al-Qaeda goal and other terrorist organization, to expand on what you said, includes not only driving us out of Iraq, but the region?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe it includes toppling of all moderate regimes in the region?
Yes, sir.
All regimes that are unfaithful to their view of religion?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe it is the ultimate destruction of the State of Israel?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe in the Powell Doctrine?
I am very familiar with it, and I would say...
Do you believe in it or not?
Well, sir, there are different. There are eight elements to the Powell Doctrine.
Well, let me sum them up to one. You go to war with overwhelming force.
Yes, sir.
Do you believe we have the overwhelming force we need to do all the missions required of us to bring about a democracy in Iraq at this point in time?
I need to talk to the commanders to find that out.
Senator. The jobs assigned to the military leadership commanders would include, do you agree, eventually trying to disarm the militia because you can't have a democracy with armed religious and political parties?
Yes, sir.
Do you also believe it includes training the Iraqi army?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe it includes rebuilding the police force, because I think it's a miserable failure and we need to start over virtually?
Not entirely clear to me, Senator, that that should be the responsibility of the Department of Defense, but we have, as best I can tell, the Department has that responsibility now.
Kevin Whitelaw, U.S. News and World Report, what's your take on that very interesting line of questioning from a Republican senator?
It was an interesting line of questioning, and again, that's somewhat in line with where Senator McCain has been coming from, the school of thought that says, you know, if we're going to make this thing work, we actually need more troops in the short and maybe even medium term to try to bring things under control in Iraq, the argument being we've never, ever had enough troops to do the job. When he laid out that list of tasks, which you can argue is still by itself not even complete, it really does sort of help, you know, again, sort of lay out the scope of just how much work needs to be done yet, even 3.5 years into this. And so that was, we'll have to see where that goes. But, you know, you're also seeing that in the rest of the questioning, Gates is trying very much not to commit to anything and was trying to explain at other times why more troops might not be necessary.
Hmm. Briefly, to wrap up, help us understand what happens after today's hearings.
Well, after today's hearings, we should see a confirmation vote by the committee in the next day or two, and then as early as tomorrow, but certainly by the end of the week, we should see the full Senate likely approve the nomination. Between Gates then taking his post and the Iraq Study Group reporting out tomorrow, then all eyes are going to be on the White House to see what, if anything, they do to alter, change course here.
Kevin Whitelaw, senior writer for U.S. News and World Report. Kevin, we appreciate so much your time and expertise this morning. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We're talking this hour about Robert Gates' testimony today before the Senate Armed Services Committee. We'll hear in a moment from former Secretary of Defense William Cohen. But first, we're going to dip into the hearings again. This is from earlier today. Here is Robert Gates in his opening statement before the committee.
The Department of Defense, in peacetime and in wartime, always faces multiple challenges, many of which were identified in the questions the committee asked me to answer. If I am confirmed by the Senate, I will do my best to bring progress in addressing as many of these challenges as possible. At the same time, I am under no illusion why I am sitting before you today, for the war in Iraq. Addressing the challenges we face in Iraq must and will be my highest priority if confirmed. I welcome the many alternative strategies and tactics proposed by members of Congress and others. More are coming, most notably from the Iraq Study Group, of which I was a member until November 8th, led by former Congressman Lee Hamilton and former Secretary of State James Baker. Other reviews are ongoing within the Department of Defense and elsewhere in government. I am open to a wide range of ideas and proposals. If confirmed, I plan urgently to consult with our military leaders and our combat commanders in the field, as well as with others in the executive branch and in Congress. I would then sit down with the President and members of the National Security Council to discuss the situation in Iraq and offer my thoughts and recommendations. I will give most serious consideration to the views of those who lead our men and women in uniform. And of course, it is the President who will decide what, if any, changes are made in our approach. While I am open to alternative ideas about our future strategy and tactics in Iraq, I feel quite strongly about one point. Developments in Iraq over the next year or two will, I believe, shape the entire Middle East and greatly influence global geopolitics for many years to come.
That's Robert Gates earlier today in his opening statement. Joining me now from Washington is William Cohen, Secretary of Defense under Bill Clinton from 1997 to 2001. He was Maine Senator from 1978 to 1996, and he's currently chairman of the consulting firm The Cohen Group. Secretary Cohen, it's nice to speak with you again.
Good to speak with you. Let me apologize for my voice in advance. This is not Barry White.
It's good for radio, Secretary Cohen. Thank you. What does Robert Gates bring to the job of Secretary of Defense?
He does bring a wealth of experience, and having spent much of his life in public service, certainly in the national security field and out as Director of Central Intelligence. So he has an intelligence background, also a national security background, and I think he has a sort of a worldview that will bring in the job itself. But I think we have to lower some expectations here. 2 years is not a very long time. Mm. And in that two-year time frame, it's going to be almost overwhelmed with the immediate issues of Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran possibly being in the mix, and not to mention North Korea. So all of the issues that the previous caller had mentioned about transformation, procurement issues, they're going to be put on the back burner, at least in the initial stages. And a lot will depend upon who he keeps on as his principal advisors. If he walks into a situation, he's got to establish a quick rapport with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, other senior-level military officers, maintain very good relations with Capitol Hill, all the while trying to balance these issues of how do I fill this gap with the procurement budget, where the estimate is that we're anywhere from $60 to $120 billion short on what we've agreed to purchase and what we can afford to pay. So these are some of the issues you're going to hit with right at the get-go.
Do you think he's the kind of man that can do all that?
Well, I think he's very capable. He certainly has been able to manage a large bureaucracy, none quite as large as the Defense Department, which is the largest corporation in the world, if you think in terms of the people in uniform plus civilian personnel, and a nearly $500 billion budget. That takes a lot of management skill, but he has that, I think, to be sure.
Secretary Cohen, do you think President Bush is ready for real change with regard to his policy in Iraq?
Well, I'm not sure what the Baker-Hamilton study group is going to recommend in the way of real change. It seems to me that from what I've heard to date, they have surfaced several options, and we all understand there are no good options left, and what will come out, no doubt, will be the best of those bad options. Other than saying we have to stay a bit longer to see if we can't build the security force up, and that we ought to start at least planning for some downsizing sometime in the future, which is undefined, and that we possibly have to engage Syria and Iran. I don't know what kind of fundamental change they are going to recommend. We're seeing a number of different proposals start to surface. Secretary Rumsfeld's last memo to President Bush saying that we should consider downsizing, and we should consider redeploying to the region, which sounds quite similar to what Congressman Jack Murther and others in the Democratic Party were advocating. So it's hard to say at this particular point how much fundamental change, or whether or not this is a real serious attempt to hold a bipartisan group together to lend this to this recommendation to the president and say we think that there's a very short time frame to see whether or not certain benchmarks, we won't call them time limitations, but certain benchmarks can be achieved. And if they can't, and if the conflict and the carnage continues.
Let me just interrupt your thought for just one moment and to say, regardless of the recommendations and all those things that the senators and Congress have been talking about, we keep hearing the president say no course correction in Iraq. When Robert Gates is put in as defense secretary, regardless of what the president says, is he still obliged to execute the president's orders?
Yes. He serves at the pleasure of the president. He is not an independent actor. What he has to do is to take the best advice that he is getting from military planners, add to that his own kind of worldview and judgment in terms of what needs to be done, to make that presentation to the president. He will be in competition possibly with State Department, NSC, possibly other agencies. But he has the obligation to make that presentation to the president. If the president says, thank you very much, Secretary Gates, but I think we're going in a different direction, and here's the plan that I intend to have you execute. Bob Gates at that point has a choice. He can say, Mr. President, he can salute smartly and say, will do. Or he can say, I'm sorry, this is I can't agree with this and can't execute it. Now, I don't expect that to take place, but the notion that somehow he's going to be an independent actor, that he has his own plan or will have his own plan, and that will be different from the president's, and the president will have to yield to him, it doesn't work that way.
Are you confident the Iraq Study Group has a plan that makes sense?
I don't know. I think what the Iraq Study Group is looking and sifting through all of the options, none of which are very good at this point, in trying to piece together some kind of a coherent approach that would enjoy both Democratic support and Republican support, at least for a limited time. That's what is required. You have to have a consensus on Capitol Hill and a consensus in the country. Well, the consensus in the country is to move out of Iraq. The consensus, it seems to me, coming from what I've read on the study group and what's coming from the military is let's not leave at this moment and leave Iraq to simply descend into the hell of a full-blown civil war, that we have an obligation to try and make this work as best we can, to stabilize it as best we can, which may take a much broader group of countries being brought into an international type of conference. And I would argue that there are many, many countries who have an interest in the outcome of Iraq. And the notion that somehow this is just the U.S. or our British friends and others who are now waging this conflict in Iraq, and that's it, is sadly mistaken, because to the extent this fuse continues to burn, it has the capacity to ignite that entire region. And those countries that are dependent upon having a stable source of energy coming out of that region will find suddenly that is jeopardized, which means oil prices spike, if it's available at all, and you could have a global reaction on an economic basis, to be sure. So there's a lot at stake here. And I think what this study group is going to recommend is to hold this together as long as possible to see whether it's any viable option that they can think of and recommend that will hold the Congress together behind the president and then hold the country together. Absent that, the options aren't very good.
Given all that you've said, what's the timetable in your mind for bringing all this together?
I think very short. I would say there's probably the window is about between 4 and 6 months, and in that 4 to 6 month period of time, you will have to bring together a lot of moving parts. But my own sense is that by May or June, things will start to get more partisan. The presidential campaigns will be then much more vigorously underway, and so the partisan divide will start to show very clearly at that time. And so I think there's a short window here, a window of time of, let's say, from now until April or May, June at the outside. If they don't see progress at that point, I think it would be very difficult to persuade the American people or the Congress to stand behind this program. And then the issue will be, well, will the people in on Capitol Hill cut the money out from the soldiers who are fighting and dying over there? That's doubtful. But I think what it would do is set in motion a real political battle for 2008, which could very well decide the future of the Republican Party for some years to come. Mm.
Secretary Cohen, last question. You've been there. What's the biggest obstacle that Robert Gates will have to overcome as the new Secretary of Defense?
Oh, I think the biggest obstacle will be finding a way to hold together a coalition on Capitol Hill and the country as such, of sending the signal that we have a new approach that has at least the opportunity to produce positive results in a very short period of time. That's going to be his major challenge. And if he can show that, success breeds more success. And if we can see some progress being made, which we can't now, and it's all been relatively negative, if you see some light at the end of the tunnel, that would ease the pressure, it seems to me, to in the country to say, well, maybe it's starting to work. Right now, people don't see that.
Former Secretary of Defense William Cohen, it's nice to have you with us, sir. Thank you. Hope you feel better.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's listen again to the hearing. Here is Connecticut Senator Joseph Lieberman asking Bob Gates about fears for a conflagration in Iraq and what this means for troop levels.
Of course, the Iraqis have to reach some kind of political agreement and show political leadership to get the country to where they and we want it to be. But it's not just politics that will bring Iraq to where we and they want them to be. It also requires security. Am I right about that?
Yes, sir.
And is it fair to say that because of your concern about the potential for a regional conflagration and that we not leave Iraq in chaos, that it is highly unlikely that you would recommend to the president the beginning of a withdrawal of American troops without regard to conditions on the ground in Iraq?
I think any decision, Senator, with respect to troop levels, first of all, I would seek the views of the commanders themselves, but I think that any decision on troop levels has to be tied to the situation on the ground in some respect.
And that an increase or surge in the number of American troops there, for instance, to better embed American coalition forces with the Iraqi security forces, which is an idea that has been embraced by many, the potential for a surge or a temporary increase in American troops is one of the options that you would consider as part of your review now.
That certainly is an option, and related to that might be, do we have sufficient number of trainers? If our focus is on training and bringing up the Iraqi army, do we have enough trainers to do that job in Iraq? And do we have, should we be embedding more of our troops with the Iraqis? I think these are all questions that need to be examined.
That was an exchange with Senator Joseph Lieberman and Robert Gates from earlier today. Joining me now from Washington is Jen Nolan. She's project co-chair at the Institute of Study of Diplomacy at Georgetown University. She's also professor of international affairs at the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public and International Affairs. She's a former national security official at the State Department and a staff representative to the Senate Armed Services Committee. She was a member of a commission that Gates chaired on missile defense in 1996. Ms. Nolan, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Hello, Jane.
Can you please describe for us that commission that I just referred to and your experience with Robert Gates?
Yes, I'm happy to. The commission was appointed by Congress in the mid-1990s, 1996. New members of Congress had expressed disaffection with the CIA's analysis of the missile threat to the United States. And they called for a special commission to be appointed and asked Mr. Gates to chair it to investigate their charges that the individual analysts at the CIA had actually distorted the threat to the United States posed by third world missiles because of their own personal views about missile defense. I was appointed to that commission along with a very solid group of military and civilian officials, former officials, and I really have nothing but admiration for the way in which he conducted himself.
Because he surprised you during those hearings. In what way?
To go back to that period, it was a very heated partisan time, although perhaps compared to today, it may seem rather pallid, but the new members of Congress who are very interested in missile defense were really very activists, and the pressure was on to find mistakes in the CIA analysts' work and to basically verify that they, in fact, had been influenced by their own political views and by the views of the Clinton administration.
Hmm.
As an advocate of missile defense himself, Robert Gates led the most objective, careful, sober analysis of the intelligence that had been presented and analyzed, and in the end concluded that there had been politicization, but it was on the part of the Congress, not the analysts at CIA.
Hmm.
And he stood up very much for the integrity of the process of intelligence gathering and assessment.
I know you identify yourself as a liberal Democrat, and yet you feel he is the right person to head the Defense Department. Why?
I think that this is a very, very difficult time, and I think that the country is very lucky to have someone who's willing to serve and walk into the enormous problems that they will face in the Pentagon and in generally in our security policy. And because I have seen Robert Gates act in a very dispassionate, judicious way, I I think he has a very good chance of being able to build some consensus.
I'd like to go back for a moment and listen to a bit of the hearings that are going on now. Here is Senator John Warner. He's asking Robert Gates whether he understands President Bush's mission in Iraq.
The question I have is, did you understand fully what's in the mind of the president when he said, we're going to stay in Iraq until the mission is completed?
Mr. Chairman, I have the sense that the president's view of accomplishing the mission at this point is an Iraq that can defend itself, can sustain itself, and can govern itself. I also believe that he understands that there needs to be a change in our approach in Iraq, that what we are doing now is not working satisfactorily. When he asked me to take this job, as he put it, he wanted someone with fresh eyes to look at the situation and make recommendations. In my view, all options are on the table in terms of how we address this problem in Iraq, in terms of how we can be more successful, and how we can, at some point, begin to draw down our forces.
Joining me now from Bethesda, Maryland, is Melvin Goodman. He's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy, a Washington think tank. He was an analyst at the CIA from 1966 to 1990. He wrote an op-ed in the Baltimore Sun titled, Wrong Man to Replace Rumsfeld. Mr. Goodman, nice to have you with us.
Hello, Jane. Good to be with you.
You have a different point of view. What was your experience with Robert Gates while at the CIA?
Well, I have a much different point of view, and before I give you my experience, let me remind the listeners of a couple things. In 1987, Gates was nominated to be the CIA director, and he had to withdraw his nomination because the majority of the committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, did not believe Gates when he said he knew nothing about Iran-Contra. And, of course, we have documented records, we have the Walsh inquiry, and we know that Gates was involved in all the operational details. So essentially, he lied to the Congress in 1987. In 1991, there were 31 senators who voted against Bob Gates because of Iran-Contra and because he politicized intelligence. That's more votes against Gates than for all the CIA directors in the history of the CIA going back nearly 60 years. Now, I come into the story with regard to politicization because I was on the other side of the front line in terms of as a former colleague of Bob Gates and then working for Bob Gates. I watched Bob Gates politicize intelligence on the Soviet Union, helping to paint the Soviet Union as 10 feet tall to justify the unprecedented peacetime defense budgets of the Reagan administration. I saw him distort intelligence on Iran in order to justify Iran-Contra, which was the illegal sale of arms of Hawk missiles to Iran at exorbitant prices, with the profits being diverted to Swiss bank accounts and then funneled to the Contras, which was a violation of the Boland Amendment. So we're talking about basic issues of character. We're talking about integrity. And as you walk into the CIA building, there's a biblical inscription that says, know the truth and the truth will set you free. This is not something Gates tried to do. He didn't try to learn the truth. And when you think of the 1980s, he was a key intelligence advisor and eventually held the number two position at the CIA in terms of the intelligence community, and he was wrong on all the central intelligence questions of the day with regard to the Soviet Union, with regard to Gorbachev, with regard to the impact of Gorbachev and his reforms on Soviet-American relations, with regard to arms control. That's why I feel there's a delicious irony going on now where Gates, who was an acknowledged politicizer of intelligence, and we have the record from the 91 hearings with all of the documents that were declassified, now he's being brought in, and he's going to receive absolution today from the Senate when he's confirmed, because they believe he will save us in Iraq, which is a war we entered with the politicization of intelligence. So it seems to me we've come full circle here. Mm. This is certainly not a man who's fit to serve in terms of character. And when you look at his fitness in terms of just his skill sets, this is a man without experience with the military, without experience in industrial management. And when you look at the best secretaries of defense, people like Bill Perry and Harold Brown, they have had experience like that. But to me, Gates is very reminiscent of our worst secretaries of defense, McNamara and Rumsfeld. He's a micromanager. He's temperamentally unsuited to delegate responsibility. He can be extremely arrogant. with his subordinates. And what we know about Bob Gates is that essentially he's a chameleon who has served his master, and he has served his master well, no matter who that is, right or left. So I'd be very careful, finally, in terms of putting any label on Bob Gates, because Bob Gates has essentially, over the years, been a windsock for whoever he served. So I can't believe that we can't do better in terms of two things. One, we face the most difficult national security situation we've ever faced since the end of World War II, and he is taking over a position that, with the exception of the presidency, is the most important position in all of Washington, because he is the steward of the military at a time we were losing a war, and therefore he is the liaison between the White House and the uniformed military. This is a very dangerous time for the United States, and Gates is not up to that task.
Let me go back to Jan Nolan for a moment at Georgetown University. Jan, you support Robert Gates. You've worked with him. How do you respond to these allegations by Melvin Goodman?
Well, I have to say I have enormous respect for intelligence analysts who have been through the wars that have, in fact, I think, truthfully, involved progressive political influence over intelligence products. It's not just an anomaly of the current administration. And having said that, obviously, I did not work for Gates under a protracted period of time. What I saw was the exact opposite of what's being described by Mr. Melman. I think what we have to do is look forward and see what can be salvaged in the future in this administration, particularly with regard to Iraq. There is no single person that is going to, certainly Secretary of Defense, is going to turn the corner on what we are doing in Iraq, and it is not going to be simply up to Gates. So we shouldn't be inflating the expectations, as Bill Cohen said. But that said, the whole issue of the politicization of intelligence is very, very, very important. We are actually running a study at Georgetown University on that very topic, on what are not really intelligence failures as we think of them, but rather policy failures, the failure to heed good intelligence. So I think Mr. Melman's perspective is very important historically and important for the future, and we'll have to see which of the Bill Gateses, which of the Bob Gateses we both described, really will bear out.
Well, Melvin Goodman, given your criticism, how will Gates have to prove himself now? Because it looks like he will be confirmed.
Well, there's no doubt he'll be confirmed, and the only thing we can do really is assess his performance. And I think we'll start to gather information immediately, because I think the entire E-ring corridor of the Pentagon in terms of the top leadership will have to be cleaned out. There might be one or two exceptions. Steve Cambone, the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, has already announced he'll be leaving the first of the year, and I'm sure Gates would have asked him to go if Cambone hadn't stepped aside on his own. But that will be an important test, because over the past 5 or 6 years in the Bush administration, we've seen a steady accumulation of power and influence for intelligence within the Pentagon. The Pentagon now controls the intelligence community. It's certainly not done by John Negroponte, the Director for National Intelligence. They dominate the defense budget. They dominate intelligence personnel. Most people report to the Pentagon for their orders in the intelligence community, not to Negroponte. So Gates is going to have to make key decisions, someone who really knows the intelligence community, and he must also know the dangers of allowing a policymaking organization such as the Pentagon to accumulate authority in assessing finished intelligence products and such things as satellite photography and its imagery. So we are going to see some tests pretty soon. But I think it's wrong to think that somehow Gates is going to be the solution to the problem of Iraq. Gates is not going to have as big a role to play on Iraq as people imagine. This is the president's decision. The vice president clearly is fanatical on continuing to go forward to full speed ahead.
But isn't there more pressure now than there ever has been, Mr. Goodman?
I think there is real political pressure. But I think if Bush had been listening to the political pressure, he would have named someone such as Sam Nunn to be Secretary of Defense. In other words, he could have done what Clinton did when his presidency was in trouble. He named a Republican, Bill Cohen, to be Secretary of Defense. Bush really should have done the same thing. And in getting Sam Nunn, you would have had someone who knew the military, who had a military background, who had the respect of the armed forces and the uniform military. Bob Gates, just he is an unknown quantity at a time when this is the most important position in Washington, I think, other than the president himself.
Well,
this
speaking
is a
of
very dangerous move.
Speaking of Iraq and our troops, I'd like to hear a bit more from the hearings this morning. Senator Carl Levin asked Robert Gates about President Bush's statement that America needs to keep troops in Iraq as long as the Iraqis ask us to be there. This was what Robert Gates had to say about that.
It seems to me that the United States is going to have some presence in Iraq for a long time. The Iraqi forces clearly have no logistical capability of their own. They have no air power of their own. So the United States clearly, even if whatever changed approach or strategy we come up with, the president implements, works, we are still going to have some level of American support there for the Iraqi military.
We have a lot of calls. People wanted to get in on this conversation. Let's take one from Tom. He's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you very much. Listen, there is a tremendous amount of frustration among myself and all of America on this war of Iraq. It keeps going on and on, and it seems like there's something missing. There's something between the lines that just doesn't fit. And I think what it is, it's desire. It's a lack of desire, a unity of desire of the entire Iraq state to pull together in the same direction. You know, we had a football team in South Carolina in 81 by Morrison. It was just a regular football team, whatever, you know. But for some reason, he was able to get all of those men, all 11 men, to pull in the same direction. They won 11 out of 12 games. It's the same problem in Iraq. Ever since the very start, you've got these different fractions that want to pull in different
mm-hmm.
directions. You know, when you have a football team, you can't have one quarterback calling one signal. I think if and even I've heard now that the Constitution that they've drawn up, they're still one of the major factions that hasn't agreed to it, and therefore they need to get on the same note, the same boat, going the same way. If they will, when they've got the most powerful country in the world behind them, backing them, all they need to do is a desire. There is a lack of a unity of desire, and be it Gates or anybody, if they don't figure that out, if Gates doesn't figure that out, or whoever it is, we're going to be a tremendous quagmire that's going to continue to go on.
Thanks for your call, Tom. Jan Nolan, what's the allure of such a job with such a mess in Iraq right now for Robert Gates?
It's an excellent question. I would say that he is a professional public servant and that he served in other capacities, and he certainly had to have had some kind of assurance that he can take a different path. Again, we have to be very cautious about estimates of his capacity to deviate very far, and not least because there are very, very few good options for the resolution of Iraq. But I think that the administration is very lucky to have him. I honestly don't know very many people who would step into this position at this point.
Jay is calling from Gloucester, Massachusetts. Jay, hi, you're on the air. Jay, are you there? Bruce is calling from Pittsburgh, Massachusetts. Bruce, hello to you.
Hi. I would like to get a little off of Iraq and Iran-Contra for a minute and ask about the possible way he may be moving the Pentagon in the future. I know Rumsfeld was trying to change the direction in a lot of the programs within the Pentagon, and he was having a lot of internal opposition on that. And I was wondering if there's any hint that he may be trying to do some of that as far as, changing our force structure and that, and if that may possibly have some effect on future wars.
Melvin Goodman, you're not a fan necessarily of Robert Gates, but is that something he needs to do and fast?
Well, first, I think we should give some credit to Donald Rumsfeld. He came into the Pentagon with ideas about transformation, of taking this very hidebound military and trying to transform their thinking in terms of what the new threats would look like. He realizes we have too much sea-based power and too much sea-based air power. These are very expensive platforms, and the real challenges that confront the United States are small-scale, involving non-state actors and insurgencies and terrorist groups around the world. I think he was trying to reform the weapons acquisition process. Given his personality, he went about it in the wrong, totally wrong way. And, of course, he alienated everyone. And with the Iraq decision, he really created contempt among the military because he put soldiers at risk unnecessarily. My problem with Gates is he doesn't have any of those skill sets. He doesn't have that background in military issues. And I'm trying to keep an ear on the hearings, but no one has really asked about his views on transformation, on the military of the 21st century, on what skills he brings to resolve disputes between the Air Force, say, between the F-22 fighter aircraft and the C-130 transport aircraft. These are going to be very new issues for Bob. And as Bill Cohen said earlier, he only has 2 years in this job. So he's really in a holding pattern. Over the next 2 years, as the Bush administration practices damage limitation and tries to protect the Bush legacy. And as far as what Jan said about Gates taking over this job, I don't think we're lucky to get Gates. And I don't think, frankly, Gates had any choice. The Bush family made Gates what he is today when they made him the CIA director. He's president of the Bush Academy, otherwise known as Texas A&M. And frankly, I don't think he had any choice. I think he was called back to Washington and told, Bob, you know, you've got to do this. The Bush legacy requires it right now.
We don't have much time left, but I wanted to quote Senator Carl Levin from this morning. He's a Democrat from Michigan. He is in line to be the next chairman of the Armed Services Committee. He told reporters that although he opposed Gates' nomination as CIA director in 1991, he's now willing to give Gates a fresh look. Given the time and the circumstances, Mr. Goodman, isn't that what's required?
Well, yes, but I don't think you can ignore the past. The past is prologue, and these are character issues. And I don't think Bob has suddenly changed his character just because he's been nominated to be Secretary of Defense. So the fresh look should not be an automatic absolution for sins of the past. It should be a fresh look at what went on. Does Gates now have the maturity? Does he have the character? Does he have the judgment? And I think these are the key issues, and that really hasn't changed, and therefore the past becomes just as important as the present.
Jan Nolan, you get the final word. Will Gates be able to rise above the politics quickly?
I have to agree with my my colleague here. Mr. Melman is completely correct. Whichever path is prologue, one, and second, we'll have to wait and see. There's no way that really anyone can know.
Jan Nolan, Georgetown University, Melvin Goodman, my thanks to both of you.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And to all my guests, thank you. And to all my guests this hour, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.